Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is George Howson, and today we're here to preview the 2024 Monaco Grand Prix. Joining me today, we have Grid Talk co-host Owen Medford.
Hello.
And the man behind AHGP is Aaron Harper.
Good evening.
But before we get into the episode, we must thank our sponsor for this episode, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. Get all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow for all your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to get on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. So, lads, we're heading into Monaco this weekend. A very, very much a iconic race in the Formula One calendar, a cornerstone event that has taken place pretty much every year since the inception of the Formula One World Championship back in 1950. I'll start with you first, Owain. What are your favourite memories when it comes to the Monaco Grand Prix?
I mean, I think you've obviously, the one that immediately came to mind, you know, before the show was, it was Lewis Hamilton's win in the wet. That's one thing that comes to mind as a sort of, you know, it shows how crazy Monaco can be. But the other issue with Monaco is that the other one that comes to mind is Daniel Ricciardo in, I think it was maybe 2018, 2017, with that edge failure. That's 150 horsepower. But obviously, due to the nature of Monte Carlo and at the time, the regulation of the cars where they're 2 meters wide and getting on for 5 or 6 meters long, it was impossible to get past him, even though he was down to quite significantly on power. And so I think that's kind of sums up Monaco in two moments, really.
Yeah, that's the thing. Monaco, despite having had changes over the years and decades, it's still fundamentally the same. It's the narrowest, the most dangerous, the most punishing circuit on the Formula One calendar. It's lined with barriers throughout its run. And yeah, the Formula One cars these days, if you look at them compared to a car from the 1950s, say, for example, it is completely chalk and cheese, as you would expect for over 70 years of difference. But Aaron, Owain's picked out two moments that have been, you know, relatively recently in the memories. Do you want to go back a bit further, perhaps, and go for some older Monaco memories back from the 80s and 90s, perhaps?
Yeah, I can pick one from the 90s. And it's kind of apt, actually, considering the weekend that we've just spent at the San Marino Grand Prix. Wow, I am going back in time. No, the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, marking 30 years since the death of Ayrton Senna. Excuse me, a frog in my throat. Got a lump in my throat. I've got to stop. I'm like Murray Walker. So yeah, it's kind of apt that the weekend we've just spent in Imola, marking 30 years since the death of Ayrton Senna around the Imola circuit. What was the following race in 1994? It was Monaco. And 30 years on, we follow Imola with Monaco. So it's not necessarily a memory, it's more of a moment, because I was only a year old when all of that took place. But I think that's kind of poignant in terms of, you know, the way the things have panned out. It's just, it was meant to be in some respects. But memory-wise, Owain's taken two that I was going to pick. But I'm going to go with 2019 and the sort of commemorations of Niki Lauda. It was not long after he passed as well. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton took a really impressive victory because he had Max Verstappen hot on his heels, sending it down into the seafront chicane, and it could have ended in tears, but he survived. Everyone got through it, and he took a really important, I think that's probably one of his most special victories, because Niki Lauda played an important role in Lewis joining Mercedes, and he was loved, adored within the team, and obviously the sport misses him greatly. But I'm going to pick another one as well that kind of sums Monaco up for me. 2001, right? Most of you will go, what on earth happened in 2001 in Monaco? Well, my favourite driver as a kid was David Coulthard. He qualified on pole position for the Monaco Grand Prix. I'd been out, I think, at Legoland, and I came home to watch the race. Turned it on, and DC stalled on the formation lap. Didn't get going, so from pole he went to last, and he spent most of the race stuck behind the orange arrows of Enrique Bernaldi. And it was just infuriating because it was a race he really should have won. Instead, Michael Schumacher won it at a canter. So there are some wide-ranging memories for you from Owain's more recent ones that show that Monaco is, you know, truly unpredictable and exciting, to some of the more tragic and annoying, frustrating memories of Monaco. I think we've covered the entire breadth of the Monaco Grand Prix there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go a little bit further than that as well. I'll go with some that I've kind of been thinking about this week as well. 1982, the race where nobody wanted to win it, or everybody kept running out of fuel and crashing into the barriers. If you've never seen that race, or never seen the final laps of that race, go look it up. It'll be on YouTube or something. It's absolutely unbelievable. And of course, for me as well, 1996, three cars actually finishing the race, one of them being Olivier Panis, of course. The final win for a French driver for like 24 years till Pierre Gasly managed it in 2020, I think it was. So that was a surreal one. And of course, 1984 as well, Ayrton Senna and Stefan Beloff as well. Rest in peace, both of their souls. Unbelievable performances from the pair of them in monsoon conditions that they would never even dream about racing in these days. And with good reason too. It was just downright dangerous, of course. But yeah, so... But, you know, when I was actually thinking about this, you know, in the run-up to the Monaco Grand Prix away, and, you know, a lot of my favourite memories, particularly ones of those that I just mentioned, are from races a very long time ago. And Monaco is very much a Marmite circuit for me. People either love it or they hate it. Where do you stand on it?
I mean, personally, we often hear the sort of, it's more of an adage, really, that, you know, if Monaco were proposed to the calendar today, it wouldn't be approved. You know, I think I believe the original race was in 1907, and as you've mentioned previously, the track hasn't changed that much since. I believe it was a 100 lap race there at the time, and regularly we have a race, well, relatively regularly we have races that run into the 2-hour time limit, and I think it's, you know, we've knocked it down to 78 laps. So despite being one of the shortest laps and the shortest, yeah, you know, both in terms of time and distance, but also But because of the average speed being so low, it ends up taking such a long time. And I think for me, it's the endurance of it. That's my, what I love about Monaco. That's what I think it's. I love it for that. I love the endurance, the fact that it tests the drivers to their limit. It doesn't matter what car you're in. You know, we've seen numerous drivers crash, you know, Schumacher, Senna, you know, people heralded as the master of Monaco, you know, crashing out of it. And that's because it is so hard. And I think that as much as we should have the really fast tracks, you know, we should have the wide sweeping turns of Austria and Spa, but, you know, as much as we have those, and those are a one kind of challenge, really, this is the completely opposite end of the scale. We have the slowest corner in Formula One, and it's the hardest place to overtake. And that makes, I think, every time you see an overtake or you see a win, it makes it mean so much more. Like Olivier, as much as only three people finished in 1996, and Olivier Panis got his only one and only win of a Formula One Grand Prix at Monaco, I think that's that was almost a testament to his skill in some ways, that he, you know, he managed to keep it on the road when so many other people didn't. And that for me is the challenge of Monaco. It is the most confined and sort of physically demanding race on the calendar in that particular way.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would doubt that. I don't think anybody, even the detractors of Monaco, would ever deny that it's a huge challenge. But I think, Aaron, I think the problem for some people is, well, according to some people, I should say, is that despite it being a massive challenge, it's not, some people might say it's not entertaining because we don't see much overtaking around the circuit. What do you think about Monaco in the modern era? Should it be on the calendar, or should it be something perhaps confined to the history books?
So the challenge of qualifying around Monaco is absolutely unbelievable. It's actually probably the most exciting qualifying session of the year, because you are seeing 20 of the very best drivers in the world take the best machinery that is in sport in terms of car racing around the silliest layout. Like Owen said, it just wouldn't get approved nowadays. So Saturday is incredible. Sunday, I just want to stick forks in my eyes because it is dull as dishwater. And even when it rains, nowadays the cars are so big, you still can't overtake. You're literally relying on a mistake. And the drivers are driving sort of within themselves constantly now. It's so different to, you know, if you think back to Hamilton's win in 2008, the drivers were driving basically giant go-karts. The cars were a lot slimmer. There was, you know, they'd taken away the driver aids, and the tyres were different, obviously. So there was so many different factors in that. You could overtake because you could get the cars side by side. Nowadays, you really, really are pushed to actually get even side by side. It's so difficult. You know, a defensive move just covers off any kind of overtake. So in that respect, I love the Saturday. I hate the Sunday with an absolute passion. I'm not actually going to be able to watch the race live this year on Sunday because I'm at a wedding. And part of me is like, that's actually kind of good. I feel like I'm going to be spending my time a bit better on Sunday afternoon. But Saturday, I'll get to watch qualifying, and it's the most thrilling experience, watching qualifying, seeing the drivers push to the limit. And you really do see the drivers excel. So last year, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull kind of had no business being on pole position, but he delivered a Max Verstappen lap. That was him making the difference. And we saw Alonso on the front row alongside him. It's a track where the driver makes the difference. But when it comes to race day, it is all about strategy. It's about going longer. It's a slow burn, really. And you're waiting for that one decisive moment when the two cars are side by side up the hill, and then they show a replay of Lance Stroll. But, you know, that's Monaco for you.
Yeah. I hear you on that one. Personally, I'm on the love it side of things. But yeah, I'm glad you can, you know, you can recognize that qualifying is just epic. You know, even if you don't like the race, even if you don't like the lack of overtaking, qualifying is the ultimate challenge. And seeing how, you know, close these guys get to the barriers is just scary, really. It shows how immensely talented all of them are. Being able to drive a car around there for 2 hours without crashing it into the wall is something else. But let us know what you think about it. Let us know on our social medias. We're at Grid Talk UK everywhere you can find the at symbol. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and probably a few more that I'm forgetting right now. That's enough reminiscing about the good side of Monaco. But let's talk about the bad side, at least for one of the drivers, the home hero of Monaco, Owain, Charles Leclerc, a guy who's surprisingly somehow never stood on the podium, I don't believe, at Monaco. And for his first few years in F1, he seemed to have a bit of a curse, but he's been in a good form recently. He's scored two third places in the last two races. Can he beat his home curse? Can he finally stand on the podium this weekend in his home race?
I think, unfortunately, it's going to be... I kind of hate to say it, but I think there might be a spanner in the works, and that comes from McLaren. I just think, you know, Ferrari were looking like they were nearly the sort of second team to Red Bull, and that they, you know, might be at least to allow able to give him some taste of success in, you know, the streets that practically are his backyard. You know, he probably knows them sort of better than anyone, obviously. You know, so many Formula One drivers live in Monaco for various reasons, but, you know, he's the only one who is, you know, who is a resident, who is, you know, he's the only person who didn't have to move to get there. So, yeah, it's one of those things where he would have grown up there. He would have seen all of it. He, you know, he knows every single inch of that racetrack. And yet he's time after time, he's had things go against him, you know, a brake failure, you know, bringing a red flag that caused a gearbox problem, you know, so many other problems, you know, and even a double stack, and, you know, for that famous or infamous Ferrari strategy in 2022. And I think, you know, it might be, unfortunately, a story again of, you know, did someone else just coming, you know, it's sort of always the bridesmaid, never the bride, almost. I think the McLaren have a much greater chance of qualifying ahead of Red Bull, or at least on the front row, and causing them issues in the race. I don't think Ferrari didn't seem to have the pace really last weekend in Imola, and I know it's a completely different challenge, but you know, unless they sort of throw the kitchen sink at this one, I think they're going to struggle again.
Yeah, it could be interesting, and you've touched on it there. I was going to mention in my next question to Aaron the fact that we've had a Max Lando 1-2 in the last three Grand Prix in different orders, obviously, you know, and they're obviously very close at Imola. The pace of that McLaren is quite scary, frankly, for Red Bull. And I think around a circuit where you can overtake easier than Imola, I think Lando would have really had a chance of winning that race. Obviously, Monaco is harder to overtake than Imola, but in qualifying in particular, could we see an upset here, Aaron?
I think we can. I don't think Max Verstappen will win this weekend. I'm not even sure he'll be on the front row because the Red Bull is a front-limited car. So it goes through his front tyres. I'm not quite sure what the balance is in terms of Monaco. You obviously need traction, but you need a good front end to get you around the corners. I suppose a nice pointy car will pivot the car a bit better than an understeery car, which will probably want to head for the barriers, to be honest. But there's definitely a chance. Whether it's Lando who actually beats him, I'm not sure on that either. I think this could be a weekend where Charles Leclerc finally puts it all together. And there you go. Clip that up for when he inevitably doesn't. So you heard it here first. But I think Ferrari are definitely in with a shout. They were close in Imola and McLaren were mightily close. But don't discount Oscar Piastri. Really, he should have been on the front row, but for that three-place grid drop for the block on Kevin Magnussen in qualifying. But yeah, it's going to be really close. It's going to be really super close. And the only, maybe Alonso can get himself in there as well. It's such a driver's circuit. And as you mentioned, the drivers get so close to the barriers in qualifying. All it takes is one mistake and your weekend is ruined, or your teammate to spin out in front of you and cause a red flag. So it's just...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's almost a lottery, but you have to dare as much as you can to reap the rewards. But if you go over that line, there is such a heavy penalty. So yeah, it's absolutely possible that we see another Verstappen Norris leading the way battle, but there are so many drivers now sort of in that lead group. And don't discount Perez, allegedly king of the streets. He's got a victory around Monaco, So, you know, maybe he does make it to Q3 this week, but there are so many options, and sadly, none of them are for the team that I'm wearing a t-shirt to support. But it's, you know, you can't have everything in life. You can't have everything. I think we're in for a very interesting qualifying session on Saturday. So it does come down to position in Monaco, but strategy can be key. I'm not sure Verstappen's going to win this weekend, though. That's as far as I will go in terms of making a commitment.
Sounding like a bold prediction, but we'll get into those pretty soon. And the thing as well for Verstappen is that, I don't know if it got mentioned in our previous show, but he's had 8 pole positions in a row, which is a joint record. He's tying that currently with the late great Ayrton Senna. He's had every pole position this year, every out-and-out pole, not counting sprint poles now, they're different. But yeah, it would be quite ironic if, you know, Verstappen didn't get pole around a circuit where pole is so important, and also one where Ayrton Senna used to get pole so much. McLaren as well, it needs to be mentioned, their record in Monaco, partly because of Senna, partly because of drivers like Prost and Hamilton, and I think Hakkinen and Coulthard might have won there back in the day as well. But 15 wins they've had in Monaco, which is a ridiculous number when you think about it. That's 5 more than Ferrari in second place, even counting 1952, which I think was a non-championship race looking at that. So yeah, McLaren historically very, very good in Monaco. They all have their work cut out for them. But Aaron, like you rightfully say, Piastri was second in qualifying at Imola. Norris was third. If that happens again at Monaco, then McLaren could out-strategize Red Bull. They've got 2 cars up there to pressure Verstappen. So it'll be very, very interesting. And I'm not saying that at all as a biased McLaren fan. I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm saying. But anyway, from one British team that I'm a bit biased about to another British team that I like to see do well, Williams. Unfortunately, though, they're not doing particularly well in general. But Owen, I wanted to talk about Valtteri Bottas, because he was pictured coming out of the Williams hospitality area, their motorhome, whatever you want to call it, at Imola. The story goes that he was having a 15-minute meeting with James Bowles. Yes, Valtteri, it's James. That's James, who is obviously the team boss of Williams now. Now, Alex Albon has signed up. He's got a multi-year deal. He'll be at Williams next year. But there's an forming American in the other seats. So what are we thinking? Monaco is traditionally the start of silly season. Obviously, it started before the season even started. But are we going to have Valtteri Bottas going back to Williams?
I mean, you have to keep your options open. And I mean, Valtteri knows what's going on at Sauber probably better than most. He knows that Hülkenberg is already confirmed. He may well know that there's not, you know, that it might be time to look elsewhere, you know. Whether he knows that or not, I don't really know. I'm speculating there. But, you know, what you've got to look at is the fact that Williams do seem to be on the sort of operationally, at least, do seem to be on the ascendancy. Yes, they're not necessarily, you know, particularly good. They're not even top of the midfield yet. But one thing I would say is that maybe he, you know, Valtteri sort of knows to trust the process, and it seems that they're on the up, and maybe he's, you know, you've got to keep your options open in this business. You know, the moment something comes better along better that might get you up to the point where you can be world champion or at least win races, I think you have to take it. And so it's almost due diligence to sort of have that kind of meeting. It seems, how do I put it, almost too obvious though to do it at the race weekend. You know, it could be about any number of different things. I doubt it's going to be anything other than moving to the team, let's be honest. But it just seems like something seems fishy about it. I mean, why would you do it there? Why would you do it in a public setting? I mean, what was so urgent that a 15-minute meeting needed to be had right there and then at that race weekend, and it couldn't have waited or be done any other way? I mean, that's what sort of throws me off about it. But I can see Bottas maybe thinking, well, I'm not going to get a seat here, and I can get a seat maybe at a Williams who I trust to be at the front of the grid, more so than, you know, than Audi, or maybe I don't trust myself, not don't trust myself, but I don't trust Audi to want to give me a seat, so I'm going to look after me and maybe go over there instead.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I didn't really think about that. It almost seems like he's trying to send a message. Maybe he's trying to send a message to Sauber/Audi, like, look, I'm talking to the teams. If you want to sign me up, you have to do it soon. Maybe that was what he was trying to do, because I totally take your point there. Like, look at us right now. None of us are in the same room. We're all meeting on Zoom. Why could James Vowles and Valtteri Bottas not done that, especially in this day and age? So it's an interesting one for sure, but I could definitely see him going back there. But I think, to borrow a phrase that you said before, I think the spanner in the works is Logan Sargeant. Obviously, he's in that Williams seat right now. Dorrington Capital are the main people behind Williams. I think they probably want an American driver in that second seat. Would they want an American driver over better results? Debatedly. But what's your take, Aaron? What do you think?
I think Bottas was in there posing for Williams' nude special calendar because, you know, how Bottas likes to get his clothes off. But all jokes aside, yeah, it's an interesting situation with Bottas because obviously he's left Mercedes, gone to Sauber, done okay, and then the performance of the car has kind of dwindled, let's be honest. And they're kind of back where they were about 10 years ago, which is a shame for a name that's, okay, it's been in and out of the Formula One grid in terms of actually being the name of the car and the team for a few times. But it's been with us since the early 90s. Sauber is a mainstay of Formula One in their many different guises. So obviously they're going to become Audi in a couple of years. I don't see Audi picking Bottas if they've already signed Hülkenberg. If you were going to keep Bottas, you'd have done that already, and then you'd partner him up with a Carlos Sainz or a top nine race winner, because then you then have two race winners in your team. Bottas has won, was it 9, 10, 11 Grand Prix with Mercedes, so you know he knows how to get the job done. Yeah, I think he's looking around. I think Williams is a decent bet. There's a good project going on there. He knows James Vowles, so he won't have James Vowles necessarily coming on the radio telling him to get out of the way. That'll be down to the head of strategy at Williams or his race engineer at Williams, potentially. But there is also Haas. They're losing Hülkenberg. They're likely to bring in Oliver Behrmann as a rookie. Do they keep Kevin Magnussen? Or do they bring in Valtteri Bottas and have that race-winning experience? You know, this is probably a conversation for a different podcast. But there are options available for Valtteri. He's a race winner, multiple race winner. He's got lots to offer. He is quick. We know that because he can challenge Lewis Hamilton over a single lap. But, you know, it's just whether those teams want to take him. He's not getting any younger. Honestly, the grid could do with a little bit of freshening up in terms of the age profile. But, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And that goes for whether you're 17 or you're 44. So, you know, may the best drivers be on the grid.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I think as well, I personally don't see him staying at Sauber next year. I think if they're going to I think for that second seat, you've got Carlos Sainz sniffing around potentially, but more likely you've got the likes of Teo Pourchaire, obviously F2 driver. He's in their driver academy. Sorry, F2 champion from last year, I should say. Zane Maloney has been doing very well. He's recently joined the Sauber Academy too. So I don't see Bottas staying around. I think Hülkenberg is the experienced driver in that pairing, and then there's going to be someone else. Hell, I honestly think it'd be more likely Joe would stay, to be honest. Give him one more chance, one more season, but we'll have to see. Again, let us know, guys. Tweet us, post to us, at us, or whatever social medias you choose. Let us know where you think Bottas is heading next year and what that alleged calendar might look like. But no images, please. Anyway, so the last thing I want to talk about is, well, two Mercedes-powered teams, the Mercedes Works team and Aston Martin, Owen, who are both not having a great time of it, particularly Aston Martin. They had a pretty turgid weekend overall. Fernando Alonso starting from the pit lane, could not make any ground up. Lance Stroll picking up a few points in ninth, but it's really not what they need or want at this stage. Mercedes, I think, maybe potentially a bit better, but the fact they're still sixth and seventh is not very encouraging. But do you think Monaco might suit their cars better, perhaps?
As you say, it was a bit of a scrappy weekend for all of them, really. You know, what with, you know, we had the world champions going through the gravel more than their less experienced teammates. It was very odd, to be quite honest with you. When it comes to Monaco, I think, you know, it's more possible the pace deficit is sort of less noticeable there, I would say. You obviously have to jack the cars up a little bit, you know, owing to the nature of the track. And, you know, it's a well-kept public road, but it's a public road at the end of the day, you know, and raising the ride height. I mean, we've seen that sort of slightly, you know, somewhat benefit, particularly Mercedes in the past. But when it comes to Aston Martin, I think maybe they're stalling out, having sort of their familiar troubles where they just start to go backwards. And I don't necessarily think that Monaco is going to be any different. I mean, yeah, as it comes to Mercedes, I kind of think this is maybe an opportunity for them, but it could equally be an opportunity for anyone else behind them. And, you know, I think they could they're both riding the very fine balance between being, you know, just at the front runners or starting to back into the midfield. And quite honestly, I think they've got to be even worrying about the Haas as well. So I think it's going to be quite a tough weekend. And I don't think it's sort of an uplift in fortunes anytime soon for either of them, to be quite honest.
Fair enough. Aaron, what do you think? More of the same from Aston and Mercedes? I'm sure you'll have a totally unbiased opinion given the shirt that you're wearing right now.
I won't give the unbiased I won't give the biased opinion. I'll give the unbiased opinion because, look, Mercedes are way off where they want to be. They keep over-promising and under-delivering, essentially. Aston Martin talking the big talk and not walking the walk right now, whether that's car development, second driver, aging first driver. It's a combination of so many factors. It's very bizarre because you've got the McLaren powered by Mercedes basically at the front of the grid now, and it shows the problems that Aston Martin and Mercedes are having. I think Mercedes' issue is a little bit of brain drain. I think this has been, it's been mentioned before on the podcast, or at least we've spoken about it privately. Lots of people leaving the team, and that's normal. Red Bull went through it, Ferrari went through it, and you know, it's just what happens. You have to rebuild that winning team, and the Mercedes team are hoping that the culture that they've built over the last sort of decade and a half helps them cultivate that winning process once again. But they've got to wait until 2026 because they've just simply not got hold of these regulations at all. The car looks like it's making a step forward and then it just doesn't. So yeah, they're struggling. Aston seem to be going backwards, like Owain mentioned. They're just not developing the car. They had updates in Imola and they just didn't seem to work. And obviously Alonso crashing out in FP3 didn't help them. You really can't afford to make that mistake this weekend because you'll get even less change out of the weekend than you did in Imola. I don't see either of them really progressing any further forward than a scrap over the final couple of points positions, really, because if the top three teams do the job they're supposed to do, then the best the other two teams are going to do is seventh, and that's notwithstanding a wild Hülkenberg qualifying in the top 10 or Tsunoda doing the business for RB. Ricciardo is very good around Monaco as well, so there's definitely peril in terms of them not even making Q3, which for Mercedes and Aston Martin is almost unthinkable. But, you know, it is Monaco after all. It can spring a surprise. So we'll keep our eye on it.
Yeah, the unthinkable has become probably, really, or definitely a possible for those teams, but not in a good way. So yeah, I don't think we're going to see either of those teams feature on our podiums, but maybe in some bold predictions. Oh, Owain, what's your podium prediction for this weekend and the pole position and, of course, a bold prediction?
You know what? I'm going to go with, I think, you know what, I'm going to start with pole, and I think it's going to, I still think it's going to be Max Verstappen, and I cannot be convinced otherwise. I mean, the guy, I mean, as much as, you know, he's starting to feel the pressure, and that's when the mistakes start to creep in. I mean, we did see, you know, a few of that. I mean, obviously, I'd put the more of them down to the car than anything else. You know, they were starting, we saw a few of those in Friday practice at Imola, and it's entirely possible that, you know, when it's in a comfort zone, it just becomes effortless when people are so far away from you that you can just kind of turn up, rock up, and, you know, put yourself, don't even have to put yourself to the max to make it, you know, pull out the wins and poles and things like that, then it's sort of it's easy. But we're starting to see the mistakes maybe creep in. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but because of that, I think that, you know what, I think he's going to be under pressure from the McLaren in the race, and I think he's going to lose it to them. I think I'm going to go with Piastri to win the Monaco Grand Prix. I think I can see a sort of pincered strategy. You know, we've seen, you know, Perez has sort of done okay around Monaco, but also sometimes not. You know, I think I'm going to go Max Verstappen second, and then Norris third, probably. And as a bold prediction, I'm going to go with Perez on the podium.
He's hedging his bets.
Yep.
He's gambling. It's Monaco. Why not? Why not exactly? But if you're going to gamble, gamble responsibly. Go on BetOnline. Aaron, what's your pole prediction, your podium and your bold prediction for this weekend?
I'm going to go with Oscar Piastri for pole position in a McLaren front row lockout. I think we're going to be all papaya on the front row, and I can kind of see a McLaren 1-2, but I can also see them losing it. So I'm going to go with a podium of Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, and Charles Leclerc as my podium. And my bold prediction is that Red Bull don't qualify in the top five.
Wow. So wow. We can dream.
There will be all papaya front row, all red second row, and there might be a Hülkenberg or a wild RB. There might be a Red Bull branded car on the third row, but in the top five, but one of them won't be a Red Bull car. And that's my bold prediction.
Well, I don't even want to say that. We'll have to see. It's Monaco. Anything can happen. And it usually does. But there we go. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I mean, that would very much make a surprising five-star race. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, you can head over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and give us a five-star review on those. We really would appreciate it. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, please consider heading over there and giving us a like, subscribing to the channel. And of course, you can find out when you ring the bell icon to find out when we go live. Our next show will be
live from 5 p.m. on Sunday. That's UK time, so that's just about an hour or so after the race concludes. Oh, Wayne, I've given a mention to our socials and everything, but we've got a sister show too.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, honestly, it's a weekend to plug it. After, you know, the sort of insanity that was Imola, particularly, in, you know, in the support races, you know, I think six safety cars in the F3, I think in the F3 race on the Sunday, I believe, which I didn't know was possible with their lap count. And to be honest with you, I remember in the sprint race, was it in the sprint race for F2, we had a lot. So if you'd like to understand exactly what happened, make sure you listen to Formula Talk. That's hosted by Sophia Richmond for us. And you can find it everywhere that you find Grid Talk.
Yes, and I'll be on that next one, trying to unpick everything that happened at Imola. So we've definitely got our jobs cut out for us. One, Aaron, I've mentioned you're the man behind AHGP. What is that, and where can people find it?
So it's a YouTube channel where we play F1 Manager. I'm currently playing through with Haas, where we're only allowed to use drivers who've won the GP2 or Formula 2 championship. And my current driver lineup is Nico Hülkenberg and Felipe Drugovic. We've recently won races with both of them. So we are breaking the mold very much with Haas. But we also do some challenge streams. We recently tried to beat McLaren's 2023 score without upgrading the car until Austria. We failed miserably. And the latest challenge we're taking on is, can we win the world championship with Max Verstappen? And he starts every race last. And so far, we've not won a single race yet. With Max, at least. Checo's want to. But we do lots of different challenges, experiment videos, lots of different stuff. So it's cool, fun and fresh. And hopefully when F1 Manager 24 rolls around in a couple of months' time, we get AHGP on the grid, the 11th team that is actually allowed in. It actually adds value to the sport. Wink. And yeah, we'll have lots more content coming through the next game cycle. So come and subscribe, come and join the stream, and we have lots of fun.
Yeah, definitely go and do that. I do watch some of those videos sometimes. They are very entertaining, very silly, and some things that unfortunately we won't see anytime soon, like an 11th team. It's really, really sad. But there we go. We can live it out in the video game world. So that's the main thing. But yeah, Grid Talk is also available on YouTube, where most of the episodes are recorded live. This is not one of them. This is a preview. But like I mentioned, the race show will be going out live about an hour or so after the race concludes, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Cast. Just search for Follow Them on Grid Talk for our big catalogue of shows, for previews, sprint reviews, everything in between, some Firesides episodes as well. One of those is coming out soon. Please consider supporting the show financially as well on Patreon so we can get better lights, mics, some recording equipment. And yeah, like I said, we'll be back on Sunday at 5 p.m. UK time. Thank you very much for joining us, lads. Really do appreciate it, as always.
No worries.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And yes, and thank you very much for listening and watching the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online. And goodbye.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
When I grow up, I'm going to be a vegetarian.
Veterinarian? It's awesome.
And I'm going to be what you said we need more of.
So you want to be a plumber-narian?
Do you think I can?
I think that if you work really hard, you can be anything.
Promise?
You bet I do.
When you promise your kids the world, we're here to help you keep it. Ohio's 529 plan is the best tax-free savings plan for future college or career training nationwide. Start now at collegeadvantage.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on!
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hanging in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.